are listening to KBUT Community Radio, 90.3 in Crested Butte, 88.9 in Gunnison, and worldwide at kbut.org. This is Community Matters, KBUT's public affairs program, and I'm your host, Kate Knapp. In this episode, we are chatting with the Crested Butte Mountain Theater about what's on the docket for 2024. We've got their new artistic director in the studio to learn more. And we're also going to connect with the Crested Butte Avalanche Center and Zach Guy to learn more about how the recent snow impacts the backcountry and avalanche danger. We are joined now with the Crested Butte Mountain Theater's new artistic director, Skylar Mathias. The Crested Butte Mountain Theater is located here in Crested Butte, and they are in their fifth decade here in the valley. Skylar, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
So you took on this role as the artistic director at the Crested Butte Mountain Theater this past year, and you have a pretty strong background in community theater. How did you get here?
Yeah, so I think those may be two questions about my love and passion for community theater and then how I ended up here. First, starting out, my passion for community theater started in seventh grade when I had a friend who invited me sillily, if that's a word, to our local community theater for an education class, and that sparked my interest for theater, and obviously it became a huge part of my life, going off and studying theater in college, and continuing community theater throughout that whole time while in college as well. And so it is something that definitely made me who I am today. It continues to be a passion of mine. And so when I'm actually working as well for Mountain Roots Food Project, that's kind of what brought me to the Valley. But in that process, I saw that they were hiring an artistic director at the Crested Butte Mountain Theater. And I said, well, if for nothing else, they know that I want to go be a part of their theater, I'm going to apply for this and let them know that I want to be there. And they are were wonderful enough to consider me and hire me for the role. And so I've loved every second of it. I've been in the role for about 4 months, helped develop the 2024 season, which we'll get to here in a little bit. But it has been wonderful, and I've already started to fall in love with this community as I'm getting into it. Again, only 4 months, so not even close to being considered a local yet, but I'm working towards it.
Yeah, We're getting there.
Yeah.
So for folks that don't know, what does an artistic director do?
So I would say an artistic director handles all aspects of programming, and you could say people as well. And I would say that that's on a scale, you know. At our community theater, we have two full-time staff, an executive director and an artistic director. So I wouldn't say we have very defined roles. There is a lot of picking up where necessary. However, to me, my role is engaging with and interacting with our community and helping bring these shows, strong programming to our community. And so that looks a lot of different ways. I dabble a lot in the education components of our programming. I did, like I said, help craft the 2024 season. So I'm in the community trying to figure out who is interested, what are they interested in auditioning for? What are they interested in seeing? If you're not interested in auditioning, yeah, what is our community looking to have conversations about? If our theater is a space for dialogue and conversation, what do we want to see on our stage that will engage our community in a really sincere dialogue or a really good laugh? Doesn't mean comedies don't have good conversation starters, but we want to give a good, rounded, thorough kind of programming to our community that will engage them in all sorts of different ways.
Yeah. So what do we have on the docket for 2024?
Great question. So I am excited to share with you, and I will briefly touch on every single one of our shows today, and try to keep my excitement and briefness with each show as we go. And I hope we can come back to Small Mouth Sounds, which is our next show on our season, and a couple other things happening here coming up. But I will jump right to our second show in our season, which is White Rabbit, Red Rabbit by Nassim Soliman Poor. And that show is a unique theatrical experience in which the performer, who is different each and every night, will be given the script for the first time. And the rule is they can never have seen, performed, or have read the play before. Nassim Soleimanpour is an Iranian playwright who could not leave his country at the time and decided to write a play that could travel for him. And so it's a really unique, touching, vulnerable experience. And we have a couple community favorites performing in that show, including Mary Tuck and Andrew Hadley. And then we're actually partnering with Western Colorado University down in Gunnison. And we're going to be doing the show three times down there. Stephen Hughes and Heather Hughes will be performing down there for us as well. Our second main stage show, quasi main stage show, is called Every Brilliant Thing by Donald McMillan. This will be happening in May. And this show is a one-person show, and it is all about mental health. It is a person. I say person because it does not qualify around age or gender. This person has lost his mother when he was young and then went on to start writing in order to help his mother, writing every brilliant thing he can think of. So like one ice cream, and kept going into the tens of thousands. And so it's a wonderful, touching, intimate show. We have Love Letters by A.R. Gurney, a two-person show wherein this couple starts writing shows throughout the length of their life. Letters to each other, love letters to each other. And you see over as these two actors read these letters, their love develop and evolve over their lifetime. We have in July, The Odd Couple by Neil Simon. Mary Tuck is directing this one, a classic comedy. I know will be a community favorite for our summer season. And then we have Elvis Has Left the Building, which is about the Colonel, their most recent movie, you know, the Elvis movie. The Colonel, he is in this retelling of that story, is in this comedic retelling of the same story that was in that new movie, has an issue where Elvis is no longer in the building and he needs to fill the casino performance that night and accidentally hypnotizes a couple of his colleagues into becoming Elvis's, and chaos ensues, as you can maybe tell. In October, we have our Halloween production, which is Teens on Stage. So we're trying to get our kids involved in our theater. The Edgar Allan Poe Afterlife Radio Show. And so it is no memorization necessary, and the kids are going to have a lot of fun engaging adults and kids alike in that production. And then one of my favorites, I'll be directing in November, Lois Lowry's The Giver, an adaptation by Eric Koble. So the classic book, we're going to be putting up on the stage, and also a movie now. And then finally, and then I'll go back to your questions. Thank you for giving me the time to share our whole season. Every Christmas Story Ever Told. And this story is kind of like Shakespeare abridged. It is this man comes out and says, I'm tired of performing the classic Christmas story. And they decide to go through every Christmas story ever told. And they end with a mashup of every Christmas carol ever sung. And so it's a three-person show, lots of fun. It's going to be a brilliant comedy for our Christmas time. So that's kind of our season.
Wow. You guys are busy. You have a lot going on. I love that. And you kind of talked about, too, I mean, this is interesting, how theater creates this sort of dialogue with the audience. And so you're trying to capture all these different genres. What are you looking for in terms of, like, being an artistic director? And like you said, getting that feedback of, like, this really spoke to me, or...
Yeah, I've thought a lot about what kind of stories our communities are looking to tell and what kind of stories we're looking to share with each other. I think the theater, if done really well, is a really positive space for community dialogue. They say that there's a research to say that when an audience is in the theater, everyone's heartbeat gets at the same pace. And so there's a space there where there's connection and dialogue beginning to develop. And if we put really positive shows on the stage that encourage that and speak to our times, I think there's some really great opportunity to engage our community. And so, for example, Every Brilliant Thing, mental health is a huge question that we have all the time. We're putting it right there during Mental Health Awareness Month. Right there in May. So Every Brilliant Thing, again, is about how do we engage with each other when we've had grief and loss, and what happens when we have people around us that are struggling, and how do we respond to that? And that whole dialogue, I think, is valuable for any community. But I know in our mountain towns, we also have that dialogue happening a lot. And so I look for those kind of shows, and I have that dialogue with the people in around me to say, what are we looking to dialogue about? And it's challenging in the same way to go, okay, what are we going to be talking about a year from now when I was planning this season? A year from now, what are we going to be talking about? So there is a challenge there, but there's something about the shows that we pick that kind of become, because of their intimacy and their specificity, they become universal and create a dialogue necessary for what that person is coming into that room at that time. So that's our hope, is that we put shows on the season that people will be inspired to talk to their family, talk to their friends about after they've come.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see this whole set of upcoming performances. You and I had talked a little bit about the impacts of COVID-19 and the pandemic and just not having theater to connect with people at all. How was that experience for you, and how does it feel now? Do you have a deeper appreciation?
Yes, absolutely. And I will be frank and say I was fortunate enough to not be immersed in the theater during the COVID pandemic. I was taking a slight hiatus for about two or three years there. And the reality is I saw a lot of my friends, their whole worlds got flipped upside down. You know, the thing that was kind of keeping them, sustaining them as they were pursuing a theater degree was the only thing that they could do. And so many theaters, including myself, was thinking about how do we tell a story virtually? And I think all of us were like, there's no theater virtually. I think there's power, or there's good things to try. And I think there's, you know, let's get our shows out on I don't know, film, and everybody's watched Hamilton on Disney Plus. It's a good thing. But at the same time, theater is there to be a connection between two people, or a connection between an audience and a performer, a connection between the audience members themselves. And without that physical space, it doesn't exist in the same way. And COVID just tore that apart. And so unfortunately, there's a lot of look at the theater around us right now in our country and around our world that hasn't had a great recovery from the pandemic. We have had a hard time bringing people back into the theater and getting people engaged again into it. The whole world has changed. And I think it is our challenge as producers of art and producers of theater to figure out how to re-engage people in that dialogue after they took a two-year break on engaging with people, and see what we can do to re-engage that. There's nothing more powerful to me than the connection that happens in a space like that. And so it's asking people to engage vulnerably in that again is our challenge.
Yeah, and so for folks that haven't been to the Crested Butte Mountain Theater, can you describe the space and where it's located? Because it's very intimate and quaint, and it's also incredibly historical. Like I mentioned, it's been around for 5 decades now.
Yes. Yeah. It is, and I'm 4 months into my world, and so I've heard many iterations of where we were, including the old Center for the Arts, and have been all over producing theater wherever was necessary. But we are currently in the old town hall. Am I correct on that?
I think so, yeah.
It is right there on Elk Ave. It is with the beautiful bell tower at the top. We are actually upstairs right above the bus stop at the old town hall stop there. And what I love about that space is when I first came, and I actually was given the position before I made it into town, and I was very fortunate to go to the space finally and see it. And I was like, this is my space. You know, there is something to be said about the Center for the Arts, and I love the Center for the Arts. I would love to perform there someday. I'd love to produce there someday. But my background is in kind of intimate, small community theater productions where we can put together a fun, unique show and put people in the round or put people on two sides of the stage. And that space gives us permission to do that. And we have such support from our community and our town here in Crested Butte that they allow us to produce the work that we feel is important. And so yes, if you are coming off the bus stop there, hop on off, check out our little board there for any upcoming shows. And then if it's happened that night, grab dinner and come on back and check out a show. We're not far from every great restaurant in town.
And so the Crested Butte Mountain Theater has other offerings too. You guys do improv, you do karaoke night. Can you talk a little more about what you guys have going on for the community? There's lots of opportunity here.
Absolutely. So my goal is I see community theater as a space for everyone. This is your community theater. If you're living right here in Crested Butte or around the world, come on and join us. This is your community theater. And that means that if you've performed on Broadway or if you've never performed in a show before, we want you on our stage. And so that means it is my job to figure out how do I create strong entry points into our space. And so I've developed various educational opportunities, improv, and I'm not the one that developed the improv. Subject to Change has been around for a while, but I want this to be a programming that feels inviting to anyone and everyone. If you've seen a show and you're like, man, that sounds like it'd be a lot of fun, or if you're just lacking community and you're looking for a place to start and build a place that you want to feel belonging to, the Crested Butte Mountain Theater is the place for you. And so I'll say this in a couple ways. We have a couple educational opportunities for our young ones. Right now we're doing a tech design class, and that's just a 6-week class. If you ever want to get connected with our education opportunities, we're hoping to make it down in Gunnison eventually. But right now we're connected with the Crested Butte Community Schools. And that's Jill over there at the after-school programming. And so she's the best point of contact. We're going to have a 3rd through 5th grade class coming up here at the end of February, starting maybe late February, early March. And so if you're interested in getting involved in that, please contact her. And you're more than welcome to email me as well, and we'll get you to the person that needs to know. For adults, we have Playwrights Workshop, and that's every 4th Tuesday. If you've ever read a play and you're like, I think I could do that, I believe you can too, and come on by and check it out. We're going to be doing that from 6 to 9 every 4th Tuesday. And my goal with that is to encourage people who have never written before, who have written before, to think creatively about how do we tell stories effectively. And through that, we're also going to do 2 limited stage readings throughout the year. So with these new plays, we're going to produce them as well. We also have, like you said, improv. That's coming up.
Yes.
Mark your calendars right now. January 26th and 27th at 7 p.m. And then we also have a late night show January 27th at 10 p.m. So if you're a restaurant worker, come on by and hang out with us on that late night show. Or if you just are a night owl. That's our first show of the year, and we're hoping to keep that going throughout the whole year. We have shows booked already for February and March. So we'll keep it coming. with that as well, if you're interested in getting involved in improv, every first Sunday of the month, from 12 to 2, we're doing an improv workshop. So again, it's about me trying to figure out ways to, if somebody's just interested and wants to try it out, I want you to have a space to kind of enter in and find that community here. So let me know if you have a different idea on how to make that happen. That's what I got for right
now.
I've got a couple more shows that I got to talk to you about.
Yeah, okay, so what else do we have on the docket for 2024?
Yes. So coming right up, we have the Golden Marmots, which I've never been able to attend, but is as famous as the Oscars, maybe more important, so that's the clarifying for it. we're celebrating the excellence in theater that we had over 2023. It's an annual Marmots Awards, and so we've got the nominations out right now. We're currently in the voting process, and then we're going to be giving away some great awards to our volunteers that have been a part of our theater or been up on our stage over the last year. So February 3rd at 7 o'clock, and you can get those on our website, those tickets. And then the show that I really want to talk to you about is coming up here in February, February 8th through the 18th. The only day we're not performing between there is that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then also the Super Bowl. we figured the sales would be down on February 11th. So enjoy Super Bowl and then come to us on the other nights. This wonderful show, Small Mouth Sounds by Bess Wohl, takes place entirely at a silent retreat, which means it's a unique theatrical experience in which we kind of depend on sound and words to make our connections. And in this one, we rely on eyes and on our body language to make that connection. I promise you, there's still some words to lean on. There is a teacher in the play that is communicating with us at all times, or at least half the play there. But this silent retreat finds 6 people coming into it that lack, as we've talked about many times, what theater can do, that connection. They're struggling some way in their life. And throughout the course of this play, they have a lot of chaos and a lot of things that happen. I feel by the end, they found that connection that they really need. So it's a beautiful journey that we take on and through this unique theatrical experience to see these players, these performers, come out on the other side more connected than when they came in.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I love the idea of having no like lines that you have to memorize.
Yeah. Very few. A couple actors have a monologue, okay. And so I feel bad for my friends with the monologues, because it might be misleading. But a couple of them have, you know, four or five lines, and they're like, "This is on par. This is what I like."
And so KBUT and the Crested Butte Mountain Theater also have a fun collaboration coming up for Mardi Gras. We are going to be doing a Mardi Gras parade, and we are also, this is February 13th. We're going to have a party at the Malardi. So
party at the Malardi. Come on by.
There's going to be live music and broadcasting. And this is kicking off our pledge drive with KBUT as well. So it's going to be a really great time. And we're kind of reviving Mardi Gras for the community. So for theater folks, for folks that love radio, we encourage everyone to come out and have fun.
Yeah.
You know, get a float going. Come join us.
I love the community component of you know, our organizations and how many people that have a DJ set here at the station and then are also hanging out with us over at the theater. I just assume everybody has a station, a radio time on the KBUT station.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited for that partnership.
And for those just tuning in, we are joined now with the Crested Butte Mountain Theater's new artistic director, Skylar Mathias. We have been talking about all of their upcoming performances, and to learn more about upcoming performances, including Small Mouth Sounds, Every Brilliant Thing, and even more, you can visit cbmountaintheater.org. Skylar, thanks so much for joining us. This has been so much fun.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You are listening to Community Matters, KBUT's public affairs program. You just heard from Skylar Mathias. He is the new artistic director at Crested Butte Mountain Theater. Coming up next, we are going to learn more about what is happening in the backcountry. We have Zach Guy here in the studio. He is a forecaster with the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. He's going to give us the details on the impacts with the latest storm and what that means for the backcountry. Stay tuned. You are listening to KBUT Community Radio, 90.3 in Crested Butte, 88.9 in Gunnison, and worldwide at KBUT.org. This is Community Matters, KBUT's live public affairs program, and I am your host, Kate Gnapp. We are joined with Zach Guy. He is the forecaster with the Crested Butte Avalanche Center, and intern Elise Brises. They are here to give us the details on the impacts of the latest storm and what it means for the backcountry. Thanks so much for joining us, you guys. How's it going?
It's a pleasure to be here. What a week.
I know. Yeah, we had a lot of snow since we last saw each other. So what does this all mean for the backcountry? How are we impacted?
Yeah, I mean, we went from having a really low snowpack, almost a month of drought weather, into now a pretty healthy looking snowpack. And that's a huge amount of weight on the snowpack that comes in a short amount of time. So anytime something like that happens, we're going to have a big avalanche cycle. And we had, I think, 4 or 5 days of high avalanche danger, tons of avalanches, more than 300 that we documented. And they grew in size as the storm went on. By the end of the storm, we were seeing several, or I'd say, I don't know, 5 or 6 that were D3s or larger, mm-hmm. Which means large enough to destroy a house or a car. So wow. We saw, an extended period of very dangerous conditions. And now the danger is starting to very slowly come down after this storm. But the problem is that long drought that we had. This would be a great storm if it fell on a strong snowpack and we'd be set up for success. But the problem is the base of our snowpack now is really weak and sugary. So it's leaving us with, you know, you've heard us rant about this on our forecast, the persistent slab problem. Just what that means is we have a persistent weak layer at the base of the snowpack that is going to be problematic down the road, you know, currently and down the road. So it's not something that heals quickly.
Yeah. And so you said we've seen about 300 avalanches in the backcountry. What other type of activity are we seeing? Are we, you know, I see a lot of pictures of like cracks in the snow and things like that. What does that mean for folks?
Yeah. So on steep terrain, what happens is the snowpack collapses and then it releases on a slope generally steeper than about 30 to 35 degrees. On the lower angle terrain, that same process happens. You get the snowpack collapses. And a lot of times you'll hear that when you're out in the backcountry or feel it. But if it's on a lower slope angle, sometimes you won't see anything, or you'll see a crack appear in the snow, and it's just not quite steep enough to release on, you know, compared to steep terrain. So that's a great sign of instability that we'll see, and that's something we use to kind of calibrate how dangerous it is. We'll walk around and try and get a sense of how many collapses and cracks we're seeing out there, and we kind of watch those instabilities like appear at the beginning of the storm and then really happen all over the place, and now they're starting to like disappear as the snowpack is starting to adjust and as those slabs get thicker and kind of harder for us to trigger.
And as I understand, the avalanche danger is considerable for today. Do you want to kind of remind folks what this scale is and what it means?
Sure. Yep. We have the North American Danger Scale. It's a 5-level scale from low to extreme, and considerable is in the middle. It's important to remember, though, that this scale is, it's more of an exponential scale. So 3 out of 5 may not seem that serious, but you know, it's quite a bit more significant than level 2 and level 1, you know, the lower danger levels. So considerable means, you know, there's not everything fits perfectly into a box, but our definition of considerable is dangerous avalanche conditions that requires careful terrain selection, snowpack management, cautious travel. There are, within that, there's also some other descriptors of like the expected avalanche size and the likelihood. And this is where things are getting a little tricky right now, where the generally with considerable, we're saying that natural avalanches are possible, human-triggered avalanches are likely. We're starting to see now that start to come down, where it's more like, I'd say natural avalanches are becoming unlikely. Human-triggered avalanches are maybe even possible now, like depending on where you are in the zone, somewhere between possible and likely. But the catch is that the size right now is really dictating our travel advice, where our slabs are 3 to 5 feet thick across our forecast area. So that size is really what's driving the danger, and that fits into the almost high. It's like it's large avalanches, many very large avalanches, and specific is the definition for high danger for the size distribution. But, you know, we're kind of in this phase where it's like large to very large avalanches in specific locations. And so I'm rambling a lot, but considerable means it's dangerous.
Yeah.
And we're kind of towing the line. We're going to be moving down to moderate here eventually, and probably this week, as you know, we just haven't had loading, so things are quieting down. But as we kind of move into moderate, we'll be in a tricky situation where there's this discrepancy between the size of, you know, the size will be still very serious, and you could easily get buried or killed by the type of avalanche you'll trigger, but the likelihood will be lower than what we've been seeing in the last week. So
for those just tuning in, we are chatting with the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. That is Zach Guy, and we're also joined by intern Elise Brizes. Thanks for joining us. Would you like to kind of get into how you got this role and what you're doing day to day?
Sure. I got this internship for the season by applying early on in the summer, and my interest in avalanche study and snowpack science and all of this stems from my love of being in the backcountry and skiing in the backcountry, and I got into guiding last winter, and that requires a lot of snow science background as well. So with my interest in studying the snow, I applied for the internship, got it, and have been so far assisting the forecasters in their day-to-day operations going out into the field, and acting as a partner in the backcountry for days when not more than one forecaster is available. And I've been learning a lot about how the forecasters make observations, their techniques in studying the snowpack, their techniques in communicating what they've found to the public. I've learned a lot about weather forecasting, and all that to say, I want to continue a career in snow science, and it's pretty open to me at this point. I'm just beginning in my second year in the industry, but this has set me up pretty well in terms of knowledge and experience, and I'm excited to learn more.
Yeah. Elise writes our weekly summary, so For those people who maybe don't want to follow along daily with our forecasts, we have every Friday afternoon or evening, we publish a weekly summary that kind of brings you up to speed on everything that's happened over the past week. And it's a 1 to 2 pager instead of having to read, you know, 7 days worth of forecast. So if that's kind of your jam, that's a great resource. And Elise is the one who authors that. And then we kind of work with her and make sure it's as accurate as possible.
That's great. And you guys talked too about, you know, being out in the field and making these forecasts. Do you want to tell people what you're actually doing out there? Because I think, you know, some folks don't know.
Yeah, it's like hot tub parties and skiing. No, it's a lot of going to where we expect to find issues and trying to get feedback, verifying what we're forecasting for or targeting areas of uncertainty. And so, you know, some days that means going to terrain that's maybe not great skiing or not great snowmobiling terrain, but where we are expecting to find, you know, the most active avalanche conditions. And sometimes those days overlap where we do get to go skiing and fun areas too. So it's a mix of everything, but we're out in the field and, you know, it's a mix of like digging in the snowpack, trying to trigger avalanches on terrain features where we like know that nobody's below us and where we know, where we're not, like right now the conditions are such that you can remote trigger avalanches, meaning you can be on a flat slope next to a steep slope. And so sometimes we'll, you know, go up to these slopes and just to get a sense of how reactive things are, still try to trigger avalanches remotely or, you know, with ski cuts or something like that. So those are some of the techniques. Like I said, a lot of digging, poking around, looking for signs of instability, like we talked about the cracking and collapsing. What else am I missing?
We go out there, we dig a lot of pits, and we take out the long-range lens, and we look around. We go to a high point and look around pretty much everywhere for signs of avalanche.
Yeah. I bet that's good ski conditioning, too, all the digging.
All the digging and the hiking.
And fixing weather stations. Elise has been with me on a couple of missions now where it's not always ideal weather either. You're up there and trying to, you know, fix a broken cord or whatever it is. So we've got actually the really good news, kind of random thought right now, is Eric was just up at our Dan K Memorial Station, which has been down for about a year and a half. And he just called me this afternoon and said it's working.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's been a long project. We've got a couple new sensors up there. We've got a precip sensor now that we're excited about. And we changed some of the way that the station communicates. But long story short is we're hoping that data should be up and live. Maybe currently, I haven't checked, but it'll be on our website. And that one, it's funded by Marsha Kay, who's, Dan was a user of the backcountry, and she's been helping like fund the and get that thing up and running again. So it's a huge contribution for the community to have that station up and running again.
Wow. So I know you guys have a big focus on backcountry safety, but we also have what are known as urban avalanches. Do you want to talk about how people stay safe when we have, like, what we saw, 4 feet of snowfall, you know, in a very quick period of time?
Yeah, there's a couple kind of considerations to be aware of. One is roof avalanches, and we've actually unfortunately had someone this week get injured in a roof avalanche. And I've gotten, today I got a text of at least one or two other people that got caught in roof avalanches, so it's happening. The biggest kind of thing you can do to prevent that is just kind of limit your time underneath roofs. And I know we have snow workers that have to remove the snow off the roofs, and you're shoveling, you're underneath that. So kind of time it if you can when the temperatures are cooler, like when it's warm like it is kind of right now or was earlier this weekend, that's when things are really shedding, that kind of the water lubricates and slides off the roof. And the roof avalanches tend to quiet down when it gets colder out. So if we get a good refreeze, that would be ideal. And then just the slopes around town. There's all these little steep slopes, sledding hills, up by Mount Crested Butte. In between the houses, there's avalanche paths. And actually, if you drive up to the ski resort and look to your right, you'll see a pretty decent-sized avalanche that just, like, broke right below someone's house.
Wow.
And there's those signs around Mount Crested Butte that have, you know, avalanche area, stay out. They aren't huge slopes, but the type of slope that if you're, you know, playing in the snow, like if your kids are playing in the snow or you're walking the dog or something, you can get pushed into a gully and get buried. So, those are definitely significant hazards when we have, like, these big storms like we did. And, we saw quite a few avalanches just in the urban landscape.
Yeah. And I know you guys partner with the CB Nordic to kind of stay on the game with trails that might be exposed to avalanche, like Mike's Mile.
Yeah.
I believe is closed due to avalanche danger right now.
We communicate with them when we're expecting more hazardous conditions. It's ultimately their call whether to close or open the train. And then we also mitigate the Nordic Hill, which is that big steep hill right above the Nordic Center. And tons of dog walkers and cross-country skiers going underneath that thing all the time, so that we're contracted with the town of Crested Butte to basically prevent that thing from going big, which back in, 10 years ago, that no one would touch it, and we'd get a bigger 3 or 4 foot storm, and then it might go naturally, or someone would like ski cut it and it'd go. And there were a couple of close calls, and I know at least one story, Megan Payton, who got married up to her neck when she was 19 there. Now she's a snow safety up at Irwin. But long story short, we work that hill on a regular basis now to break up the weak layers, break up the slabs, and we were busy up there all week making sure that thing stayed put. So,
and Elise, did you have something to add?
Oh yeah, I was going to explain how we mitigate avalanche on the Nordic Hill. We take a team of 3 people and we'll make ski cuts across sections of the slope to try and see if we can get it to go. The bigger it goes when we're mitigating it, the less risk of avalanche, while people are using the Nordic Trail. So, that's pretty much what I wanted to add.
Yeah. Important work, though. I don't want to be buried walking my dog.
Sometimes it's like an abstract concept. I'm like, we're going to go mitigate avalanches on the Nordic Hill. Okay, what are you doing?
No, it's nice to know like what that process actually is. And it's kind of like what you're saying, like packing down and
we skin across it.
Yeah. So I know you guys have a lot of educational opportunities as well. You do fireside chats. You do Beacon brush-ups. What do you have on the docket? What's coming up for folks?
So we actually have a fireside chat coming up in Gunnison on Sunday, February 4th at 6 p.m. We have local snowmobiler Kane Leonard talking to us about an avalanche incident that he was involved in last February. He was with 2 other snowmobilers riding outside of Mancos when one of his partners was caught, carried, and buried 165 centimeters down, almost 2 meters. A successful rescue ensued, albeit with lots of effort, and Joe, the one buried, was initially unresponsive. The sled was buried more than 10 feet down in the snowpack. And so this was a very impactful experience for that group of 3, and Kane is happy to share his story. So again, that is in Gunnison at the High Alpine Brewing Company on Sunday, February 4th at 6 p.m.
Great. Yeah.
It sounds like it'll be an awesome event. Yeah.
Yeah. It's important to share those stories, and it's definitely interesting to hear, even a minute, a few seconds can save a life, and being brushed up with the beacons is certainly helpful. Especially for folks that are driving in and you see folks digging around in the snow, that's typically what they're doing, is they're working with the Crested Butte Avalanche Center to learn backcountry safety. So anything else you guys would like to add for folks?
Well, speaking of the beacon brush up, we did that in December. That's kind of a once a year thing, but now we have a beacon park that's set up. It's right next to the community school. As you're driving into town, it'll be on your right. And the way that thing works, you go down there, there's like a box you open and you flip a couple switches. It turns on these beacons that are buried underneath the snow, and then you can practice your rescue skills. So I think that's a great technique. Whether you're a professional or your first time in the backcountry, you should always be refreshing your beacon skills. Just because when the time comes, it's stressful, and having that kind of muscle memory to go through a search is really important, rather than to kind of have the panic set in and not sure what to do. So I definitely recommend checking out the Beacon Park if you haven't done it already. And if you have, just keep visiting it. We try to get there about once a month, our forecast staff. Anything else?
No, I think that's good for me.
All right, well, we've got some great events coming up. And for observations and those local forecasts, you can visit cbavalanchecenter.org. Zach, Elise, thanks so much for coming in and joining us and letting folks know about the conditions out there. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. You are listening to KBUT Community Radio, 90.3 in Crested Butte, 88.9 in Gunnison, and worldwide at kbut.org. You've been tuned into Community Matters, KBUT's public affairs program, and I am your host, Kate Ganap. Next Monday from 4 to 5 p.m., you'll hear the KBUTeens and Rocky Mountain Community Radio's regional roundup. That is from 4 to 5 p.m. Stay tuned for NPR's All Things Considered from 5 to 7 p.m., followed by Bobby's World with Bobby Digital from 7 to 9 p.m. Then we have Fresh Tracks with Grant Hooning from 9 to 11 p.m. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.